Welcome, everybody, to the Merrill Hodge Find a Way podcast. Now, I guess to really start out, the Find a Way words and why those are significant, we'll use them every week and every episode, is because those words have helped me live a dream and fight to live. They inspire the one thing I always talk about when I speak, is they inspired action. And when I refer to the word action, that means do something about whatever you may be struggling with, whatever goal or passion you may have. You have to do your part in the journey and in the process. I also refer to, does your mind control you or do you control your mind? For example, if you have a dream or a goal or a passion and you let all of the things that people say you can't do or the odds are against you, oh, it's hard, do you let that consume you or do you control your mind and go, no, we're gonna take action. We're going to change that. Whatever odds I'm up against, I'll beat them. Whatever work's required, I'm going to do it. It's always inspired action in my journey. I'll get to some of the things where the main goal of and where the words really came from was really my desire to play in the National Football League as a little kid. They really spawned out to so many things. Find a ways have been instrumental as being a dad, trying to be the best dad I can be. And I've learned so many things from those words and taken action. To be specific to this particular podcast, those words inspired me to write this book and would eventually lead me to Dr. Cummings. Before I get to Dr. Cummings, who's going to be vital, instrumental, if you will, especially from helping people understand the science, really deciphering what does that headline really say? Is there any validity to it? Is there any truth to it? I want to back up just a second to probably what a lot of people maybe listening to this podcast grapple with. You know, I mean, what do you believe? You know, what's really true? Probably, I think most people have common sense and they're just thinking, you know, sometimes like this doesn't add up. A lot of things don't add up. That's actually the things that were driving me to take action. I got to first back up to when my career ended in 1994. I was in an ICU unit and there was a couple things that were talked about during those couple days I was in intensive care. One of them was I was confused as a player. Now, we always got to think about the perspective. 1994. This is not 2018. It's 1994. I'm sitting there going, how could I possibly be in this position when I wear a helmet? I was like, how is that? And I remember talking to, I think it was a doctor at the time, and I actually can't remember the source, to be honest with you. And they referred to a NASCAR helmet being better than an NFL helmet, a football helmet. And I'm like, wait a minute. Well, why aren't we wearing NASCAR helmets? And how could that be? It was explained to me that a NASCAR helmet is designed to withstand impact. And if you think about that for a second, it makes sense. You know, you hope that helmet never has to be in any type of a collision unless you get in a wreck. And then in that wreck, you're just, all that helmet has to do is help that driver survive that wreck. It doesn't have to survive wreck after wreck after wreck. Whereas a football helmet, because the reason it's not as good as a NASCAR helmet back in 1994 was it withstands impact. So you give up some of the protection via that. Now, if you want to fast forward to where we are today, I never thought back in that moment in 1994 we could ever get an NFL helmet to a NASCAR level. We have done that. I mean, helmets now not only absorb impact, but they withstand impact and deflect impact, if you will. The technology in helmets is ridiculous now to where it was in 1994. The trainer at the time was John Norwood with the Pittsburgh Steelers, who is still their athletic trainer there, one of the best in the business. I remember in the offseason, he's asking me if I would do it because it was voluntary. It wasn't mandatory. This is 1991. I was like, yeah, you know, John, I ain't got time for that. It's a couple-hour test. Anyway, long story short, talks me into it. I take the test. Now, why that's important is that you have a neurologist on staff. You're doing cognitive testing in 1991, 92, is that when I got to the Chicago Bears, they had no neurologist on staff. They had no cognitive testing. So I'm sitting there in intensive care going, man, wouldn't it have been nice to have that tool, to have a neurologist actually evaluate me and look at me? Because keep in mind, and we'll get into this in another podcast, and I don't want to just assume people know, I was never evaluated by a neurologist after my first concussion. I was actually cleared by a family practitioner over the phone, who's the only guy who looked at me. I wasn't cared for properly after the first one. I'm returning to play too quickly. Well, those type of protocols and that type of treatment, well, that doesn't exist today. I mean, that is obsolete, but that's what was existed in 1994. How do you make those two things different? So the real passion was to try to get, and I was thinking about the NFL at that time, better protocol, better care there. Well, then, you know, my son, he gets to age 7. He wants to play football, so I become a youth football coach. So I become active as far as putting certain things in place in youth football before they were even part of youth football. They were being dabbled with, I mean, part of the NFL, part of the NCAA, but nothing in youth football, ages 8 to 18. So I thought, you know, why don't I implement it as part of my team? We had a protocol. I let my kids know right away. Anybody gets any type of concussion, practice or in game, I remove you. You don't go return and you won't play the next week. That was just the standard. That's the way it was. They couldn't argue with me because I had found out, talked to Dr. Maroon, Dr. Lovell, Dr. Julian Bells, a lot of the great minds in the world, that, you know, if you can remove kids after a concussion, no matter what the degree is, for at least a couple weeks, and you don't let them return to that environment. And keep in mind, this is out 2003 too. How much, what we knew in 2003, that was some of the best information at that time. That would be a much better, safer thing to do than we had been doing to that point, which was nothing. So I'm like, how could we do that? So I make that a part of youth football. I help USA Football as a part of a committee to give youth football some direction. Well, that's where we come up with Heads Up Football. I'm sitting in the exact same office spot when this conference call happened. And I look up and I look at my Steeler playbook, which I'm looking at now, and I take Chuck Knoll's principles that of tackling, blocking, and playing the game to be a better, safer player. He used to always preach that. Well, that became up Heads Up Football. When a few years passed after we launched that, we were doing it with USA Football, but we needed to expand. So I went to Congress in 2009 and really challenged Congress to get this protocol in place for 8-18. We were doing it in the NCAA. We were doing it in the NFL. But the majority of football players are 8-18. And we have no protocol there. I was like, that's ridiculous. We got to at least do that. We know enough now that there at least needs to be a protocol in place. So I went there, continued to coach, continued to try to evolve the care for the injury. And once we were getting so much better there and the treatments were evolving, all of a sudden you start hearing this thing about CTE. You know, Mike Webster was my roommate when I was rookie year. When he passed away, obviously that was just earth-shattering to me personally. And you hear this stuff about CTE coming out. And right off the bat, it's just like, well, that's, you know, that's one player out of thousands. I mean, literally over 27,000 in a former NFL retired players, you think of it just in that circle. But if you think about globally how many people have played football, there's hundreds of millions who have played. So I was like, well, God, one guy, hard to say football is even a part of that just because he played football. That was just like one of a common sense thing going, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You start hearing the headlines and you start hearing people talk about, you know, football's causing this. And I'm actually, our football's a part of that. And then I'm taking a role one day in youth football. And two of my kids are missing. And I ask where they are. One of them hurt his ankle at recess playing kickball. And then the other kid, I think when they had lunch, because they go out to play, hurt his wrist on the monkey bars. And I was like, wait a minute. We've had no injuries in football. And we've been playing for 8 weeks. And I go, now I've got two players already. I jokingly said, hey guys, for the next 4 weeks while we got games, don't anybody go to recess or lunch, because I'm not going to have everybody to play football. And so I was like, wait a minute. You know, just more you think of the headlines, the more you see, the more I started to dig and talk to doctors, Joe Maroon, Julian Bells. I mean, you know, just outside that scope to find out what was the real truth of things. What does that science really say? You see the headlines too. You see the 110 out of 111 brains. You start asking questions there. And when you hear and talk to the people in the science world, that have no agenda in this, and they're looking at it objectively, they're like, well, listen, there's so much information in there that is so false. Once they started to help me kind of weed through that, and common sense was telling me, like, God, this doesn't make sense. Something doesn't feel right. I'm coaching kids, been coaching kids for almost 15 years, either camps or football, youth football. I've been a part of it for 40 years, and I'm like, there's hundreds of millions of people have done this game. It just doesn't make sense. It didn't make sense. I've been asked to write the book for a long time, and people have said, write the book. I'm like, well, aside from my story, and keep in mind, I've lived every aspect of it as a player. I've experienced almost every level of it as a parent, because Bo, my son, started age 7. Now he's 22 and a quarterback, running back at BYU. Played at every level, coached at every level. I'm a parent first and foremost. I wouldn't let my son even entertain the idea of playing football. If I thought for a second, there would be a concern from especially the protocols I had put in place. I'm like, the way we're caring for this injury, and we're finally caring for it, that was the problem. And now this other mysterious CTE thing they keep talking about is so prevalent. I'm like, but where is everybody? I mean, literally hundreds of millions of people to pull from. Somebody dies and they see that it's present there, so it's everywhere. I'm like, that just common sense says it ain't right. So I start digging. The more I dig, the more people lead me and direct me to other places, because I want to find the truth about the science. At the end of the day, I got to understand that. And I think that's what people struggle with. They see the headline, they assume it's fact, they believe it to be true. Quite honestly, they haven't lived what I've lived. They have as a player, a coach, and a parent. So I can't expect them to understand how to filter through, or the people I have access to, which is really where I come to an advantage. The people and the minds I've been able to talk to, ask questions to, get real honest answers about, you know, has really built up the steam in me to find out the absolute truth of this. Where is it? Because listen, if I thought for a second football could be causing it, I would be like, my son ain't playing. I stumbled across this guy named Dr. Cummings. First of all, it was a Yahoo article that Dr. Joe Maroon forwarded to me. And I'm like, okay, here's what makes the best about, not just his article and what he wrote, it was that he was out of Boston University. And I'm like, wait a minute. This guy's out of the only source that I ever hear it coming from, which that also concerned me. So I was like, wait a minute. There's only one group, one source that knows this? And it's always out of the New York Times. And I'm like, what, that ain't that odd? I mean, doesn't anybody go to school? Ain't that interesting? Only one university, only one area, only one paper does it come from. I'm like, Then the more people I talk to, they're like, oh, you can't. And listen, that's not what the science is saying. But I'm like, why do they say that in the article? I mean, they're scaring everybody to death. So I get a hold of Dr. Cummings. I think it was maybe in my first 2 minutes talking to Dr. Cummings, I'm like, all right, now I'm complete. I now have the guy who can explain the science to me, a 3-board certified neuropathologist, a forensic professor out of Boston University. Well, he knows more about disease in brains and a part of injury of brains than any one person on this planet. He's as qualified and credentialed. It isn't like an outside observer who, you know, took an internship and did a little bit of work and now he's going to make a comment or he's going to make an opinion. He's in the university. He's, I believe this year, he was voted professor of the year by students. When the students speak up and say, that's the guy, for that confirmation to take place, I'd love that. So I get with Dr. Cummings. I wear him out from explain this to me. What does this say? And when he reads the science to me, explains the science to me, I'm like, oh my gosh, how can the science and the evidence say one thing, but then you see the headline and it says the complete opposite? It is the complete opposite of what the science is said. I'm like, that's just brutally dishonest. I'm like, and it angered me to the point where, like, you know, you can only do so many radio shows. You can only do so many TV hits. You can only impact people in so many areas. I'm like, how could we make a permanent impact? How can we get the truth? How can we get the foundation of the truth, the explanation of the truth, so people can digest it and make a good decision by being empowered? Not by being scared by a headline they read, which they don't really know the truth about. They just see the headline. And if I had not lived what I've lived, if I had not come across and stumbled across Dr. Cummings, I could have very well fallen into that category, which, I mean, millions of families are, millions of people are. I run into them all the time, and after we have a rational conversation, you lay the evidence out to them, they're like, oh, I didn't know that. Oh, you know, well, that does make sense. And then when you start hearing, when people, you hear the truth and they start weighing it out, and now they can now make a choice out of being empowered versus scared. I just feel I have responsibility that this has to come out, that we need the evidence. We need to prove it. We need to show it and explain it so people can understand it. Then they can make a decision versus out of fear. So that leads me to really the guy that is pivotal in this whole thing, and that's Dr. Peter Cummings. Has really developed into just a dear friend of mine. But I'm passionate because he knows so much, and that he has spent a lifetime in this industry studying brains, evaluating brains, injuries, diseases. He's cut more brains, and I've been allowed to cut them with him. He showed me more about the brain than I ever dreamt I would know of. Was it a little eerie the first time? We'll get to that in a second. Yeah, from my perspective, I was like, ooh, this is creepy. But now it's time to really introduce Dr. Cummings. Welcome to the podcast, my good friend. I've kind of shared how my path has crossed yours. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to open it up for you to not only explain how we eventually, our journeys pass when I reach when I call out to you or when I end up giving you a call. But what led you to writing that article about you and your son and him, you being okay with him playing football? So kind of start at the beginning of your perspective of things you'd heard, the knowledge you have within, you know, diseases of the brain and all the things that go on with it, to eventually becoming a youth football coach and your son being allowed to play football.
Well, you lead me in with the word creepy. I don't know if that's good.
Well, you know we're gonna have some good times with that creepy, bro. You listen, yeah. Honestly, and I'll say this many times on the podcast, Doctor. I mean, without your expertise in this field and helping people understand the science, which is so important, what is really in the science and the science papers, which you're gonna we'll do this, we'll delve into all of them so that people will understand them, the headlines and how you've been able to take a headline and then explain the true facts of that headline or the lack thereof, especially from the paper that they're driving the headline from. And when people hear that, I'm gonna tell you what, they're gonna be as mad and angry as I am that they are manipulated in that fashion. It is done to sensationalize things and scare people to sell things when there is no validity whatsoever to the headline, especially when you understand the science. So what you bring to this website, these podcasts, is invaluable. Most people don't have the ability to contact somebody like you and say, hey, listen, doc, walk me through this. What does the science really say? What do the papers really say? Because here's what the headlines are saying. Which one's true? So you tell us about it, you know, just how you came, you know, first of all, to letting your son play football, who wanted to play football.
Yeah, it has been a long journey and a very difficult journey as well for a lot of reasons. And I was completely educated by the headlines. And for me to admit that as a scientist, as a doctor, as a parent is kind of embarrassing. But I'm a human and I read the news and so I fall victim to some of the same things that a lot of other people do. I remember very vividly late January, sometime January, early February 2010, a Time magazine cover of a deflated football talking about the most dangerous game. Flipping through that, and at the time my son was probably 4 or 5 years old, saying, no way, my son is never going to play football. I am done with this. And I loved football growing up. It was a huge part of my life. I played football. I credit my experience in football and the people that I've known through football for a huge part of my success in getting through school, getting through medical school. A lot of the life lessons I learned on how to grind came from playing football. At that time in early 2000, mid 2010, I decided to shut the game off. I didn't want it in my house. I didn't want my son exposed to it. For somebody who grew up loving football as much as I did, you would think that would be a very difficult decision, but it wasn't. It was very easy. It was a no-brainer for me, just shutting it off, and just no way. And it wasn't an area of interest of mine. I hadn't really looked at the papers. A lot of what I was looking at were different ways that inflammation affects the brain through different disease processes, but it wasn't something I was really interested in terms of a science neuropathology thing. It wasn't until about 2 years later, my son comes to me after being at a friend's house and he says, and he's very excited, he's all enthusiastic, comes busting through the door and he says, Dad, have you ever heard of this thing called football? And it was like some great discovery, this thing he'd never heard of before. My heart sank into my stomach. I thought, what am I going to do? And we do the best we can to protect our kids and try to shield them from things, but eventually they're going to find it. They're going to find the things that we try to protect them from. At that age, I thought, I'm not going to make a big deal of it. He wants to go out back and throw the football, then we'll throw the football. In 2 weeks, this will be completely vanished from his world. And I had pushed him into soccer and other sports. He's a very active boy and very athletic, so I wanted him to play other sports. It didn't fade away. It got to the point where he got up in the morning and the first thing he wanted to do was go out and throw the football. I couldn't get him inside at night to have dinner or get ready for bed. He just wanted to throw the football. And I ended up having to put and this is my neighbors probably thought I was nuts, but I had strung lights up through all the trees in my backyard to light the backyard up so we could throw early in the morning and in the evening when it gets dark. And then he started saying things. I don't even know how he was getting this. He really started to identify with being a football player. He said things like football players do their homework. Football players work hard. And he just took on that persona. And I said, well, difficult as it may be, if he loves it this much, I at least owe it to him to educate myself a little bit more on what's really going on. And I'm a doctor, I'm a neuropathologist, I'll go read the papers. I'm sure everything that I've read in the news and heard for headlines is going to pan out and be true, and this will be easy decision to make, and I won't let him pursue this interest in football. So when I started reading the papers, and we'll get into all these papers down the road and help people understand them, because it's hard, I realized that there was an incredible discrepancy between what I was reading and the news and what was actually not just being said in the scientific papers, the published papers, but what the data was saying in the scientific papers. I literally fell down a rabbit hole obsessing about trying to find out where the truth was in all of this. It has taken me years to get to the point, you know, where you and I can get on the phone, Meryl, and talk about this stuff. Years of really hard work that I don't think it's easy for people to do. So the Yahoo piece came about as part of that. Eric Adelson is a guy at Yahoo Sports who wrote a really fantastic piece about fear of CTE, the way that the idea and the media sense, the way media sensationalizes CTE, how that's scaring the hell out of athletes at all levels. And it was a great piece. And I reached out to him and I just said, you know, this is one of the first or few pieces that I've read that isn't a one-way monologue of fear in doom and gloom. And I just said, you know, this is just, thank you. This was a nice article. And that led to a couple of exchanges. And Eric is the type of guy who just really wants to know. I'm really impressed by the idea that he doesn't have an agenda. He doesn't have his mind made up. He's just trying to sift through this stuff. So, you know, he grilled me on a lot of stuff and he taught me some things. I hope I taught him some things. And I said, well, why don't you write what you're saying to me down in a, like an op-ed? Let's get it out there. And that's how the Yahoo piece started, and that's where that came from. And that sort of led to you and I meeting up. I should also add, Marilyn, part of this too, that it wasn't just the science, because I had read the papers and done, you know, my due diligence in the science, but then I turned to the sport. I wanted to know what football was doing, because what I was reading was that football had done nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it was not responding to this. And I think back to when I played in the late 70s, early 80s, and I think of my helmet that was a piece of plastic that had canvas straps holding together some loose foam padding inside of it, and the drills that we ran, and the physical punishment you took as a, you know, a young kid playing football. And I thought, well, you know, it was a rough sport. I got involved with both USA Football and Pop Warner in the aspect of I wanted to know what the rules were. I wanted to know how the game had changed. I didn't think the information was really that accessible. I had a lot of issues trying to find good information, which is what led me to contacting people at both organizations. And when I found out not just that the science isn't where most people think it is, and how the sport had changed and the numerous advances that had happened, it was very easy. And then I got certified to coach. I started coaching. As now football has become a part of my life. And yesterday I was coaching two football games. I was on a football field from 10 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night. Right? I go from banning it in my house where, you know, my wife's now a football widow.
See, now here's what I love about it, you know, on people that listen in, listen to our podcast, and when we have visual ones, watch them, they're going to find out that you as a neuropathologist turned into a football coach geek. And I, who've been passionate about football at every level, have turned into a neuropathologist geek. I have now cut brains where I never thought I would be standing in a room like I was standing in, cutting brains and being given direction. I go back to what this whole journey's been about. Those words, find a way, how they have inspired action. And had I not taken any action, asked any questions, you got to ask questions. I mean, and listen, we want people to ask us questions. That's what we're going to be very passionate about, transparent about. Ask us questions. If you don't understand something, there's ways for you. They'll be on the website for you to send those questions. Asking questions, you know, getting those answers, using your common sense, you know, turning over stones, digging over things, actually going to, that's why I tell my parents when I coach football, I mean, come to practice. Come watch what we're doing. You know, I want you there. I don't want you coaching me, and if you want something or need something, you please come up to me at any time, and I'm happy to talk to you and make sure that we're giving you the peace that you need, because every one of my kids I love, you know, and I care for them as if it was my own son, and I coached my son for 7 years. But now to see you as a coach, you know, your passion, you and Fionn, how you guys, just a buddy relationship, you know, the involvement that parents have with their kids is so important. for the kids. The kids love to see their parents there. They know that to be a part of that, you know, and to engage in that process. We're going to really help our listeners with specific details, specific information, not just about the science, but about the game, because I'm glad you brought that up. You know, where we are, and I go back to when this whole thing started. When I think about how we care for this particular injury in this sport. Now, keep in mind, it's in all sports, but football is the pioneer in it. It is the leader now. We are on the front of the protocols and the treatments. That right there has made it a much better, safer game than in the nearly 100 years that we have played it. And that's probably another thing that sparked me. I was like, wait a minute. We have no protocols for some 90 plus years. We have no, we're just sending people back to play the next play. And now that we have these protocols in place, the treatments, the equipment, the instruction, the rules, and you're telling me it's more dangerous now? I'm like, okay, that just doesn't make sense with all the improvement. Then when I understood the science, after it was explained to me from the understanding of what the paper says versus what the headlines say, man, now I went from being inquisitive, asking questions, to just absolutely enraged and devastated that we let that happen. And I'm like, we let that happen? I'm like, you know what? Because I believe we're all gatekeepers. If you love your kids, you want the truth about things. You want the facts about things. To sensationalize things and, in fact, lie and fabricate things to scare people is just about as a brutally dishonest thing as you could possibly do. This is how it all came. This is how I eventually meet Dr. Cummings. His expertise is going to be vital in this journey and in the information that we give you. We're glad you're going to be a part of the journey. This shares with you just how it all started, and we're going to have tons of information from the science perspective, the headline perspective, and the football perspective of what to ask, what to be doing, where we are in all levels of sports to get you excited that your kids get to play in this era, where all of this is taking place now. It's a much better, safer era than we have ever had, and it continues to get better. So there'll be plenty of podcasts and plenty of information and plenty of this guy right here, Dr. Cummings. So thanks for listening to the Merrill Hodge Find a Way podcast.